You're listening to Irish Radio Canada at Home and Abroad. We've been chatting with Terry Carney about the Famine Museum in Skibbereen. But there's also a section here that deals with Loch Hyne history. Mm. And that has connections with Lowry O'Lynchy. Lowry O'Lynchy has donkey's ears. Terry, what's the... I know it's an important feature, but tell us a little about Loch Hyne.
So Loch Hyne is a local saltwater lake, tiny, less than a square kilometre. It became the first marine nature reserve in 1981. It's the most studied body of water of its size in the world.
Right.
And how this remote lake in the middle of nowhere in West Cork came to be such a well-studied thing is actually a very interesting story.
I'm listening.
So, what the scientists will tell you why they're so interested in Loch Hyne is because you have, in a small area, a wide variety of habitats. You have fast-flowing water. You have a very deep western trough, which is over 50 metres deep. You have Bullock Island Cave, 97 metres deep. And then you have a lot of sheltered and sandy shores around the place. So you have a lot of habitats in a small area.
Right.
It's at the right latitude, so you get northern boreal species as well as southern Mediterranean species. And it has an asymmetrical tide. The tide comes in for 4.5 hours, but it takes 8.5 hours to go out, and as a result it's only a 1 metre tidal range within the loch compared to 3 metres outside. So all of that makes it a very attractive area for study. That's what they'll tell you.
Right.
It's all a load of nonsense.
Okay.
They all come to Loch Hyne, fall in love with it, and make it their lives work.
Okay.
And that has gone on from the first person who discovered it all the way up to present day. Accidentally discovered in 1886 by a Royal Irish Academy crews who were going around in their plus fours trying to find. So they took samples, went back up to the Royal Irish Academy, said this place is amazing. Then they sent another guy, Roland Southern, in 1913, took more samples. He came in on the Helga, which later was repurposed to bomb during the 1916 rebellion.
Okay.
But he went back up and he was speaking to a man called Robert Lloyd Prager, who was a very famous Irish naturalist who was involved in the Clare Island Survey. Oh, he's huge.
Yeah.
The way I've travelled, the way I've followed, this was him. But he then met a newly appointed professor in UCC, Professor Louis Renouf, who had come here from the Channel Islands. So this was 1922, right?
Yeah.
He was an Englishman.
Yeah.
Who arrived down to West Cork just after the Civil War, dressed in plus fours, carrying sample specimens under... It's a wonder he wasn't shot. Anyway, he came down here for a weekend, fell in love with the place, then started to come regularly, set up a sort of a little template of a laboratory down there, and then he went on a tour of British universities saying, come to this place, it's extraordinary. So the who's who of science came to Loch Hyne in the 1930s.
Right.
What's his name? The first director of UNESCO, founder of the World Wildlife Fund, Sir Julian Huxley.
Oh, yes.
He came with his French wife who had a silk scarf blowing in the wind in an open-top tour. Can you imagine all these exotic creatures just after the Civil War? Like?
Right.
So one of the people that came in 1937 was a young student, John Ebling, and then he introduced his tutor, Jack Kitching, to it. And the two of them came for almost 40 years every year, except the war years. And they published these really, really important papers called The Ecology of Loch Hyne. And this was the first time that ecology had been studied in the field. Everything before this was in laboratories. And they used to come with students. They'd have a ton of scientific material, a ton of provisions. They'd come over on the ferry with these kids. First thing they had to do was dig a latrine. They had no running water, they had no electricity. Lots of marriages between students, and I wonder why. There wasn't much entertainment. But again, over 40 years, these two men carried out these groundbreaking, like they were worldwide famous.
Right.
And lots of other very famous scientists, including Trevor Norton and others, came. And eventually, there were three laboratories down there, all owned by Kitching. And at this stage, he was a very old man in his 70s, and he was getting concerned about who would take this over. So he went around all these various British universities saying, you know, you need to take over these universities at this fantastic place. And Bristol University sent two staff over to check it for one day. So they drove over, had one day there, and drove back. And one of them was a man called Colin Little, Professor Colin Little. So his wife, Penny, they're great friends of mine now, she described him coming back that night, and he was sitting in the back. He was filthy, she said, covered from head to toe, came home, just covered in filth. And she said, "Oh my God, Colin, you're filthy, get into the bath." And then he said he was found to be covered in ticks. So he was inside in the bath, and she was picking the ticks off and going, "What have you done?" And he said, Penny, I found paradise." So they were the next pair of suckers. And they came every year up until last year, except the COVID years. And they have, again, groundbreaking stuff. Over the 40 years that they were doing, they did shore surveys, which is the grunt work.
Right.
So they did long, 100-metre-long shore surveys. I did some with them, counting the species. So they have all the fluctuations, natural fluctuations, and the effects of other things. And in scientific data now, there isn't such longitudinal studies, because everything is a year or 2 years. So these studies are gold.
Right.
And they're in their 80s now, and they're publishing them bit by bit. But they decided not to come back to Loch Eyne, because since it's been on the Wild Atlantic Way now, it's getting a lot of use. And whether it's that, or whether it's the canary in the coal mine, and this is happening all along our shores, there's been a huge decline in the species down there. There's been a collapse, and they're so concerned with it. And there's a study going on now about the use of it, but one of the scientists involved did a sponge. He's a professor now in New Zealand. This is kind of the international dimension of these studies. He did his sponge studies here back in the 90s, and there's less than 10% of the species he studied still present in the loch. So he, with another two, the third university, have now funded a PhD to study the usage of the loch and its effects long term. So it's but this the marine research part of it is one part of a big study I did. Mm-hmm. And I started off with archaeology, and my supervisor in UCC was a man called John Sheehan, lovely man. And I went up and he said, "You know, why are you doing Loch Eyne?" I said, "Oh, Loch Eyne's so special. And he had these little half moon glasses, and he looked over the glasses at me and he said, "No offence, no, Terry, but that's very hippie-ish." So I said, "You know, he's right, it is very hippie-ish." So I went away off, and I did two comparative studies with two other lakes in the area. In other words, saltwater lakes, but two other salt. And I did, two lakes of the same size. And I did a comparative study of the areas around them, yeah. Right? For sites of a ritual or religious nature. My argument is Loch Eyne has been regarded, you know, one of those thin places, as I call them, where you can almost feel the other world somewhere around you. Loch Eyne is that place, you know?
Right.
And anyway, so I did studies, I did a survey of sites of a ritual or religious nature, because that was my theory, so that this was regarded as special. So the two other sites, similar acreage, one had one ritual or religious site, one had seven. Loch Eyne had 37. I got a 1-1 in my study. Yeah. And then you have O'Driscoll's had their castle there. Every other castle along the coast that the O'Driscoll had was for a reason. It was strategic, it was taxation, it was watching a port, it was marking a boundary. This castle here makes no sense whatsoever. And a very eminent archaeologist, not me, a very eminent archaeologist, Connie Kelleher, agrees that this was their holiday home. This was their holiday home. And the last, the great Gaelic chieftains, Sir Fineen the Rover, in my opinion, died there and is haunting the place. But like, that's the place I was brought to for my confirmation day. That's the place we went to for anything special occasion, and it's very much associated with that, with Skibbereen, you know.
Right. So when you say it's now on the Wild Atlantic Way, have you noticed as a result of that, that while the traffic around it, and I know you said there has been a change in the number of species that are now there, do you believe that that has the impact, or would you say it is more climate change?
I don't know, you see, that is the point. And when you look to the scientists for answers, scientists will not give you an answer without empirical evidence, hence the PhD.
Yeah.
But it could be that's what's happening all along our coast with the intensive agriculture and climate change and global warming and all the rest of it. or it could be just the increased use in this specific area.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully this study will tell us that in the long term.
Mm-hmm.
But if it is the canary in the coal mine, my God, we're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
we really mm-hmm. are. Yeah. Yeah.
Terry, we better wrap up. Allow you to get on with your day, have lunch, and do
sure
all
you. Talk to the pair of you all
you
day long.
No, you quite. And we could listen all day long too. But we do need to wrap up. Thank you so much for your time. It's been fantastic.
It's been lovely to meet you.
And I know we're going to talk again, because there's another project that you've introduced me to, and I do want to research it before we come back and talk to you about it.
Oh, I'd love that. And do visit Abbey Sturry before you go. Will you promise me that? The graveyard over, because it's a very, very moving site. It's the site of the mass grave.
Yes, yes.
And it is a place of pilgrimage, to be honest with you.
Okay,
it is.
We will do.
Yeah.